two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Never seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It is a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. We also have Sheridan Hansen joining us. She is a horticulturist and she works out of the USU Botanical Center. And this morning for WaterWise at 10, she's going to help us out with our segment.
Yes.
WaterWise Tips at 10 with the KSL Greenhouse Show. We save you time, money, and work in your yard and garden.
And Sheridan, this is the point in the morning where we just like to give people water-wise tips. And Ton has told me that you have put together a drip irrigation center at the Botanical Center in the vegetable garden, and you found a way to be more efficient with water.
Yeah, so we really do focus on water conservation at the USU Green or at the USU Botanical Center. So that's one of our missions. And when we put in the urban farm demonstration garden, we wanted to really showcase how to conserve water in a vegetable setting. So what we did was we ran drip irrigation. So it's inline drip. It's a brand called Netafim, and it has emitter holes already punched into the tubing. And those emitter holes are spaced. You can get them spaced at different spacing. So you could be 12 inches, 6 inches, whatever you need. You can go to a specialty irrigation store and they can help you select what would be best for your soil type as far as spacing goes. But then we ran them along, you know, where we thought our rows would be. Now, the problem is a lot of the times we crop rotate and it becomes difficult to set irrigation rows and know that, you know, things are going to change from year to year and this is expensive. So what do you do with it? What we ended up doing, and this was a brilliant idea that our irrigation technician and specialist, Mike Kilcrease at the USU Botanical Center came up with, was that we put ball valves every 12 inches and then we hooked that inline drip up every 12 inches. And this ball valve gives us the opportunity to turn things on and off and also undo where those drip irrigation lines are and adjust and move them based on the spacing that we need to facilitate crop rotation. Mm-hmm. So we're saving water. We have a system set up that is really conducive to a vegetable garden and being able to move and flow with what we need. And it has saved us a massive amount of water and effort in that garden. So we don't have to redo the irrigation system every year. It takes our costs down and we are really conserving a lot.
I know people get very concerned about changing their irrigation system. A lot of people have just stuck with the spray because they've had it and they know how expensive it is to change things out. But eventually, the cost savings adds up.
The cost saving does add up. And I understand that it can be intimidating. Like, you're looking at the system going, okay, now how do I do this? How do I change this? Like, Ton mentioned earlier in the show, you know, what pressure are you running your irrigation system at? A lot of people don't know that. And how do I know that, you know, regular sprays take this much pressure and drip irrigation takes this much? It's something that Ton and JD and myself, we've been working on a fact sheet trying to put these things together so that it's palatable and easier for people to understand. And we've had moments of frustration and confusion ourselves with it. But, you know, you definitely can do it. And, you know, try not to be intimidated. Talk to people. Go into your specialty irrigation stores, talk to them, because they will walk you through step by step by step and help you with that pressure reduction. And the great thing is, if you are running something like a spray in your vegetable garden, they now have conversion kits where you can just pop the top of that spray head off and put in a conversion kit that reduces the pressure, and you can hook your drip irrigation right to it. So you would try and run the whole valve, that whole line on drip irrigation if you did that. But, you know, they've tried to make it easy and affordable to do. So one of those conversion kits is about $25.
You can go to a professional irrigation store, mm-hmm. you know, Sprinkler Supply, the Sprinkler Store. There's several of them out there, Up Your Way, Dirk's Plumbing.
Right.
And they can get you hooked up with whatever you need. But you can also go to your local hardware store, you know, Ace or True Value, and they will have a wide assortment of things available. And the one thing, if you want to go to the professional irrigation stores, they have like the Netafim and different things like that. But the one thing I liked about the hardware stores is everything is packaged for consumers. Right. And it says right on there, you know, a 30 PSI pressure reducer with filter compatible with this. And then, instead of just having a box of unknown emitters, they'll have a package of 10 or 20 of them. And it says 0.5 gallon per hour pressure regular, you know, 0.5 gallon per hour pressure compensating emitters. And so I wouldn't discount the hardware stores for a lot of this stuff.
Well, and I will tell you, I was at Home Depot and found inline drip for the first time ever at Home Depot. And I was jumping up and down in the aisle because I didn't have to go to a specialty store. It was right there. It was easy to use. And like you said, it was labeled really well. So I would know, you know, what it was emitting out of each emitter, how many gallons I would get per hour, all of those things.
Yeah, because I've went into a commercial, like a contractor, great, you know, where you contractors buy their irrigation supplies. I went into a store and they're all the same way. And I said, I need this. And they had to go to all four corners of the store to find whatever I needed. Nothing was labeled, which they can pull it for you and get it. But it was intimidating to me because it just wasn't there and it wasn't packaged in a way I could understand. And that's why I like the retail store option also, because I could kind of interpret what I needed to do from the packaging.
Well, and that's essentially what we've been working on with this drip irrigation stuff. We're trying to make it so it's, you know, that retail store, easy to understand, not intimidating, kind of welcoming idea to drip irrigation and all of the caveats that go along with it. So,
yeah, I was smiling a few minutes ago. I had somebody I talked to that the first time they installed drip, forgot the pressure regulator, and they were running at 100 PSI, and they'd used the tubing, and they said for about 4 or 5 minutes that it had blown all the emitters out of the tubes, out of the hose.
That's what I would
and
do.
And this thing was, water was spraying everywhere, but if you've ever turned on a hose at high pressure with like a pipe nozzle at the end and it flies everywhere, they said that their drip tubing was flying through the air like that, spraying water everywhere until it finally just blew up and blew off the end of the valve.
I would like to see this. I want to know if there's video footage.
I didn't have any.
They could make money off of that video.
We were talking
footage.
About learning curves, and I've mentioned this a couple times. I put a little bit of drip into my vegetable garden, and I had my 9-year-old son help me, and it was good he got the experience, but you really do need to watch a little bit. And sometimes, you know, if you first you don't succeed, try again. And you may get a little of that. You know, my son put the drip emitters on top of the tubing instead of the bottom. They were in, you know, just punch in. But the experience was there. I learned a little bit. I've learned also with my secondary being at 100 PSI that even with a 30-pound pressure reducer, I've still got to crank it down at the hose end because I blew up a 30-pound pressure reducer. And so I still have to just have it barely turned on. So there's always things to learn when you have this, but once you get into it, it's not too complicated.
It really isn't. I think it's doable. And, you know, I'm, you know, people will say, well, she's a girl, she's a woman. I can do that. I get it. I'm there and I can totally do it. And I feel really confident when I put in drip systems. So if you're a woman, don't be intimidated either. You can totally do this.
So what's inline? Why are we specifying inline?
Inline is the pre-drilled holes in the tubing or in the Netafim. It has mm-hmm. pre-made holes. Inline is you just run along a row. If it's point source, that means you have to punch an emitter into it and put them where you want them.
Right. And for me, inline is easy. I don't have to think about it so much. Where the point source, I'm going to have to think about where that plant is. I'm going to have to add that emitter. It's just one more step for me, you know, where the inline is just a little bit easier from my perspective and how I use it.
All right. Anything else you want to add?
Oh, I think it's something that's really doable. And, you know, the cost has come down on a lot of the products as well. So a lot of people think that's going to be really expensive. But, you know, you get into it and it's really not that bad, especially as things become available, like in the hardware stores, like that inline that I was telling you is now in Home Depot. It was a lot less expensive there than, you know, some of the other places that I've seen it. So, you know, take the dive and do a section at a time. That's what I've been doing with my personal front yard. I've taken out a section, you know, a valve and moved that to drip and just working my way through my yard. And like Ton said, it's a learning curve and we get there.
All right. We're going to come back with your calls and questions. You can call us at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Ton and Sheridan with you this morning, taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. A next listener, Ton, says, is it okay to apply Hydratain ES Plus to lawns now, and does it really help lawns retain water?
So there's been a boom.
Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah.
Okay.
In this industry of surfactants that you put into soil that people claim it opens up the soil and lets you water more deeply, and then Hydratain and other similar products will claim to retain water longer in the soil than what the soil can do on its own. The question is yes, it can do that, but does it do you any good? And the research just isn't out there to say that it does. You know, as scientists, and, you know, Sheridan and I are both horticulturists, but we're obligated to have kind of a scientific background and approach things scientifically. And it sounds good, but until we see empirical data, we can't say yes or no. And plants have survived without these kinds of products for millions of years and done fine. And, you know, we were talking to Sheridan, and her lawn areas, this is off the break, can go longer than 4 or 5 days sometimes and stay fairly green. You know, mine can also. And so I don't know that they're needed. I think that it might be a knee-jerk reaction. So what thoughts do you have, Sheridan?
You know, I've actually been wanting to pick some up and just try it for myself. And like you said, a lot of the times we just have this kind of knee-jerk reaction where it's like, okay, I've got this problem. What can I purchase to fix the problem? And that's kind of how our society functions sometimes. But, you know, if you're mulching your grass clippings, if you've kept your lawn healthy for the last several years, you're watering deeply, I don't know that it's necessarily needed, but I, like you said, I would really like to see the data on it. So I'm kind of waiting, holding my breath to see what happens
with
it.
There was a text earlier kind of along these lines wondering if people should do a 4-step during drought on their fertilizer program. And I will say that Dr. Kelly Cope, our turf specialist, has come out and said that you absolutely need to have fertilizer on your lawn during drought, or else it will not survive dormancy well and will not come back. But as far as a four-step, the only way I can really say is, how's your lawn used? If you've got kids playing on it all day, every day, the four-step may be needed. But if the only time it sees traffic is when you mow it, you probably only need two fertilizations.
Right, which is what I did this year. I cut out the summer steps because, you know, we're not out there right now. I've got teenagers. They'd rather be air conditioned.
Yeah. And well, in these four-step programs, they have these four special fertilizers for that time of year. And sometimes they'll have more slow release and less slow release. But if you look at the analyses, it'll be like a 24-5-10 and then a 23-3-16 and then 25-5-20. They really don't vary that much. And so if I'll buy a four-step for the discounts and I just use it over 2 years instead of one.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, save some money.
We all like that right now. Pat is in Bluffdale. She's on the line. Pat, good morning. What's your question?
Hi, I need advice. I bought two nice-looking burning bush plants. They're still in the pot I bought them in after a month. And one of them has developed kind of a brittle, dry outsides on the leaves, at least 75% of it. And the other one sitting right by it, leaves even touching, is perfectly fine. And so I've been hesitant to plant them because I'm afraid that one will not recover. And then I don't know, what do you think? Do you think it's it couldn't be the heat and watering because they've both been treated exactly the same.
One of them could have an internal disease in it that is getting into the root system and causing some of this, and the other one could be fine. That would be, if they've been watered equally, that would be my first suspicion.
Or It's possible that one had a better established root system than the other and has fared a little bit better. There's some things that could definitely impact
so
it.
Did you purchase them from a box store?
A box store?
A box store, like Home Depot, Costco?
Costco.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
You may have a warranty that you could return. Uh-huh. I wouldn't plant the unhealthy one. I might return it and just plant the other one or see if they have more for exchange or something.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's too late. They're supposed to match on either side of the flower corner garden, you know, so.
Good luck on that, because every time I try that, it does not work. One side is always different than the other.
Oh,
that perfectionistic instinct doesn't always work in our yards.
Okay, well, thank you for your advice.
Thanks, Pat, for your call this morning. How many times have I tried this? Like 3 feet away. Why can't they grow the same? They never do.
No, and that's the problem. The formal landscapes where you have things lined up like soldiers on either side, or, you know, everything's matchy-matchy, when a plant goes down, it's really hard to replace it. And to where you have if you have a less formal landscape style and something goes down, it's a lot easier to plug something else in, and there's not this hole in the landscape. And so it's just one thing that you run into with more formal landscaping styles.
Okay, so I'm not sure I have a more formal landscape, but okay. In fact, I was asked that question recently. What kind of landscape do you have? And I almost wanted to write free for all. I plant whatever I like, wherever I want. It's not a cottage style. I don't know that it's formal. It's a mix of everything.
You have a Maria landscape.
That's absolutely correct. Yes. That was a great answer. Thank you.
Before we go to break, there's one text, and I cannot help myself.
Okay.
It says, why are my cucumbers bitter? And I think it's because the tomatoes get treated better.
Ton,
you had
to
do it.
That's a dad joke.
Yeah,
Ton
had to do it. Now answer the question correctly, please.
Oh. Okay.
It's hot outside. Heat makes cucumbers bitter.
Makes us all a little bit.
Yeah.
Cranky,
sometimes drought
it?
Stress or sporadic watering can do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But treat your tomatoes and your cucumbers equally, and you may not have so many problems.
Cucumbers for equal garden rights.
That's right.
Yes.
Very important.
It's a holiday weekend, right? You can tell dad jokes. It's okay.
Yes.
No problem. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Steve, you will be up next. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text your questions at 57500. We'll be right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.